This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose, and once again I'm looking at some essays by Jamaica Kincaid, who is a very opinionated woman. To give you an example of that, at one point she was in England and had been shopping for a gift for her husband, who was the son of Mr. Sean, the famous editor of The New Yorker. And she went into a men's shop, and the clerk brought out ties with the royal seal on. Well, this was exactly the wrong thing to do to Jamaica Kincaid, who resented the English, resented their presence in Antigua, resented the way they planted their plants. So she thought at that moment, a very naughty thought, she thought that she woke up one morning and someone said, "All of the Brits have died. We don't know why. They just did." And that pleased her. That nasty thought sort of pleased her. She's a little bit that way. She will say what she thinks. This is her essay on the naming of plants. "One day, when I was looking at the things that lay at my feet, I was having an argument with myself over the names I should use when referring to the things that lay before me. These things were plants. The plants, all of them, there were hundreds, had two names. They had a common name, that is, a name assigned to them by people for whom plants have value, and then they had a proper name, or a Latin name, a name assigned to them by an agreed-on group of botanists." I'll interrupt the passage here to say that a long while ago, I worked at the herbarium, and my friend and my boss, Lila Schultz, needed to persuade me fully that the Latin names were terribly important because common names vary from place to place. And so I learned to respect the Latin names, certainly. I had to, as someone filing them in the herbarium. But for poetic purposes, since I write and read poetry, I can't help but still love some of the common names. Back to Jamaica Kincaid. "For a long time, I resisted using the proper names of things that lay before me. I believed that it was an affectation to say eupatorium when you could say Joe Pieweed, and I would only say Joe Pieweed. The botanist from the same part of the world as the man who sailed on three ships, the man who started the narrative from which I trace my beginning. And in a way, too, the botanists are like that man who sailed on the ships, and they emptied worlds of their names, they emptied worlds of things, animal, vegetable, and mineral, of their names, and replaced these names with names pleasing to them. These names are pleasing to them because they are reasonable. Reason is a pleasure to them." Carlos Linnaeus, born on the 23rd of May, 1707, somewhere in Sweden. I know where, but I like the high-handedness of not saying so. His father's name was Niels Ingmarsson. His family were farmers. Apparently in Sweden then, surnames were uncommon among ordinary people, so a farmer would add son to his name, or he was called after the farm on which he lived. Niels Ingmarsson became a Lutheran minister, and in doing so wanted to have a proper surname, not just the name son attached to it. On his family farm grew a linden tree. It had grown there for generations and had come to be regarded with reverence among the neighboring farmers. This linden tree was so well regarded that people passing by used to pick twigs that dropped from it and carefully place them at the base of the tree. Niels Ingmarsson took his surname from this tree. Linnaeus is the Latinized form of the Swedish word lind. Other branches of the family who also needed a surname drew inspiration from this tree. Tillander, the Latin word for linden, is tilia, and then some others who also needed a surname took the name Lindelius from the Swedish word lind, which means linden. Carl Linnaeus's father had a garden. I don't know what his mother had. His father loved growing things in his garden and would point them out to young Carlos, but when Carl could not remember the names of the plants, his father gave him a scolding and told him he wouldn't tell him the names anymore. Is this a true story? Well, how could it not be? He grew up not far from a forest filled with beech, a forest with pine, a grove filled with oaks. His father had a collection of rare plants in his garden, but what would be rare to him in that place, I do not know. At the time that Linnaeus was born, Sweden, this small country that I now think of as filled with well-meaning, benign people, interested mainly in the well-being of children and the well-being of the unfortunate, no matter their age, was the ruler of the empire. Linnaeus was called the little botanist because he would neglect his studies and go out looking at flowers. Even if he had already showed an interest in naming and classifying plants or the ability to do so, this fact is not in any account of his life that I've come across. He went to the University of Uppsala. He studied there with Olof Rudbeck. I pause at this name, Rudbeck, and say Rudbeckia, and say I do not like Rudbeckia. I never have it in my garden. But then I remember that a particularly stately, beautiful yellow flower, Rudbeckia nitilda, grows at a corner of my field garden. Linnaeus met Anders Celsius, the Celsius scale of temperature measurement, who was so taken with Linnaeus's knowledge of botany that he gave Linnaeus free lodging at his house. Linnaeus became one of the youngest lecturers at his university. He went to Lapland and collected plants and insects native to that region of the world. I enter the picture only when Linnaeus takes a boat to Holland. He becomes a doctor of an obviously neurotic man, obvious only to me, I arbitrarily deem him so, named George Clifford. George Clifford is often described as a rich merchant banker. Just like that, a rich merchant banker. This description often seems to say that a rich merchant banker is merely a type of person one could be, an ordinary type of person. Anyone could be that. And now how to go on. For hearing that George Clifford was a rich merchant in the 18th century, I'm sure that I have become part of the narrative of the binomial system of plant nomenclature. George Clifford had greenhouses full of vegetable materials from all over the world. This is what Linnaeus wrote of him. I was greatly amazed when I entered the greenhouses, full as they were of so many plants that a son of the north must feel bewitched, and wonder to what strange quarter of the globe he had been transported. In the first house were cultivated an abundance of flowers from southern Europe, from Spain, the south of France, Italy, Sicily, and the Isles of Greece. In the second were treasures from Asia, such as poincianas, coconut, and other palms. In the third, Africa's strangely shaped, not to say misshapen plants, such as numerous forms of aloe and carnivorous flowers, euphorbias, proteas, and so on. And finally, in the fourth greenhouse, were grown the charming inhabitants of America and the rest of the New World, large masses of cactus varieties, orchids, cruciferae, yams, magnolia, tulip trees, calabash trees, cassias, acacias, tamarinds, pepper plants. If one does not know the names of things, the knowledge of things is useless. I've heard that quotation as, without names, the knowledge of things perishes. And I attribute it to Linnaeus himself. The invention of this system has been a good thing. Its narrative would begin in this way. In the beginning, the vegetable kingdom was chaos. People everywhere called things by a name that made sense to them and not a name arrived at by an objective standard. But who has an interest in an objective standard? Who needs one? It makes me ask again, what to call the thing that happened to me and to all who look like me? Should I call it history? And if so, what should history mean to someone who looks like me? Should it be an idea? Should it be an open wound? Each breath I take and expel in healing and opening the wound again over and over, or is it a long moment that begins anew each day since 1492? Perhaps Jamaica Kincaid's hatred of introduced as opposed to indigenous species might be better understood if I bring up a local matter, that of Dyer's Woad. Some Englishmen apparently loved thinking of the golden hills of home and planted the seeds for Dyer's Woad, and that's been a problem for us ever since. And this is related to Kincaid's resentment of the daffodil. The naming of plants also is something that we all relate to, and the forgetting of the name of a plant is a great frustration to anyone who cares about the plant world. This is a wonderful poem by Hildegard Flanner called On Forgetting the Name of a Small Plant. A grace, a slightness, a green twist lightly angled from left to right, a trace of utterness, a pendulous white streak God help me, what flower hangs down so on upon its own ascension? You, can I forget your name and still know mine? The soft interrogation of your tendril speaks to me, yet does not speak your name. And so I leave it where I must, known so clearly long ago, today not clearly lost, a tassel seated in my mind, a tangle where you taper most. How can so much that's feminine and Greek take off and leave no evidence behind? Grand botany, old friend, in some corner of your discipline, permit me room and make it bright and wish me luck that I may spring upon the fugitive in the last syllable of her flight. This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose.